And then you would have something where, again, there's a double up on the Bodhisattvas with some of these meridians, because this is your Guardian 8 Bodhisattvas, which they are tied to the 8 trigrams, but we could put them to the direct meridians if we know the chronoacupuncture, right? So like esoteric Buddhism actually breaks this down a lot.
I'm Michael Max, and this is Geological, the podcast that curates East Asian medicine and methods through the power of conversation. Can you pause, sit for a moment with your glimpse of the depth of entanglement in years of pain and denial shared with you when your patient tells you the truth of their experience? Can you set aside that part that wants to fix the world and sit together with them in the wonderment of it all, how it's come to pass that you are here and they are too, together in the entangled, troubled way that it is, and that this is what they are living through, and you with your path, at least for this moment, your traveling companions. Now, tell me how you intend on fixing that, because there ain't no fix for the paths that we have tread and the stories that we've collected along the way. Thoughts and theories don't touch this. They are on the other side of a window. This is not the realm of theory, but rather meaning. For sure, there are emotions and judgments that readily leap to mind. They have a power, but are powerless here. Our job as practitioners is to do something. The tacit agreement is we're here to help, but there's no doing that helps a broken heart or a trust betrayed. Our job is to do, and often enough, we can. Treatment strategies readily appear in the mind, but in certain moments, there is nothing to be done. Nothing to be done, but that doesn't mean a withdrawal of attention or presence. If anything, it's an invitation to be aware that in the moment, there's nothing to do. To do, not doing. Ue, the non-doing, the Tao Te Ching points to. But it's not the non-doing of withdrawal. It's the non-doing of attentive pause. Like watching clouds in the morning sky, their movement not separate from the bowl of gray-blue, or the trees rooted firm into an earth that's hurling through space. That kind of quietude, the kind of quietude that I'm suggesting, the stillness that comes from listening. Not listening through the internal dialogue. Listening when the attention is not so encumbered by internal thought. The kind of listening that leads you to action, less tied to theory and toward more attentive exploration, where you're drawn to some points and you see if they influence the pulse, the weight of the moment, the feeling in the room. And there's something else to consider. Are you working so as to relieve your patient of their experience or helping to invite them deeper into it? This is a question I've only recently considered. The tacit agreement of medicine is to take away the trouble someone brings through the door. And at times, for sure, that is the aim. But there are moments that are not fixable. It might be the liminal space essential for processing of grief or loss. It might be a moment of ripening, where the spirit is in the essential midst of finding a new entanglement with the body. It could be the moment of realization that what's been working well enough, well, that moment is over. Sometimes our work is not to shift, fix, or remove, but rather connect, deepen, and accompany. Mostly in clinic, we lean on yang to get things done. But sometimes you'll be able to feel it. There are moments of yin stillness that are called for. There are moments we are invited to do not doing, and that will bring up a set of points that you will not find in a protocol. Any system of medicine is rooted in a worldview. There is a sense of the world that has a stabilizing coherence, a way to explain health and how it arises, along with illness and how it can be skillfully approached and treated. Chinese medicine is rooted in a set of flexible and context-sensitive principles, which might be in part the reason it has been able to shift and adapt to the influence of the past 100 years as Western medicine, with the power that can be generated from reductionist thinking, has been adopted as the go-to method throughout the world. Part of Chinese medicine's adaptation has been to become more systematized, become more, air quotes here, scientific. And it has its uses too. But if you practiced for any length of time, you'll have no doubt noticed that Chinese medicine, it's not completely rational. And that's not a criticism, but rather an invitation. In this conversation with Zach Louie, we look not to find ways of integrating acupuncture with the conventional world, but instead shine a light into aspects of Buddhism, Taoism, and even what I'll loosely call magic as ways to help better understand our medicine and who we are as practitioners. We'll get into all of this in a moment. Stay with us. These conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Worried that an EMR is too complex for you? Jane has friendly and knowledgeable support. Mayway Herbs is celebrating the 55th year of their family business. You're invited to make use of their vast library of resources. Are you concerned about the health of Mother Earth? AccuFast Needles is doing something about that. You can too. And later in the show, Ancestral Sturman offers up a sinew treatment, and the folks at Blue Poppy have something special to share as well. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the Geological website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast.
Hi folks, I'm Yvonne Lau, president of Mayway Herbs. Our family business turns 55 this year, and we wouldn't have gotten this far without the love and support of our community. We're truly grateful and promise you that we'll continue to work hard to support you and your practice. Please visit Mayway.com to find the perfect Pumsar brand formula or formulate your own in our dispensary. Our site also has lots of articles, videos, and herbal recipes for you to explore. And tune into our podcast, Chinese Medicine Matters, for insightful discussions on all things TCM. Learn about treatment strategies and powerful herbal remedies. As we welcome the month of May, our focus is on women's health. Our newsletter articles and podcast episodes this month will highlight different aspects and unique challenges women face. So subscribe or tune in. And if you're a practitioner, get a discount on our women's health formulas this month. Just visit Mayway.com. This season and every season, trust Mayway Herbs for your health and wellness needs. And thank you for supporting Real Chinese Medicine.
I love how technology can help to automate my office, and I want to share with you my favorite tool for doing so, Jane. Jane is a clinic management software in EMR with a human touch. Whether you're switching your software or going paperless for the first time, the Jane team knows that the onboarding process can feel a little overwhelming. That's why with Jane, you don't just get software, you get a whole team. Included in every Jane subscription is their award-winning customer support available by phone, email, and chat whenever you need it, even Saturdays. You can also book a free account setup consultation to review your account and ensure you feel confident about going live. If you're interested in making the switch to Jane, head to jane.app/switch to book a one-on-one demo with a member of their support team. And be sure to mention the code CHEOLOGICAL at the time of sign up for a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account. I don't know about you, but sometimes I take a step back and marvel at my acupuncture needles. I mean, they're the world's simplest medical tool, a sharpened wire and a handle. That's it. And with this simple tool, hundreds of health conditions can be resolved. I love it. What I didn't love was the amount of packaging waste I generated at the end of the day. But that has now changed too. Ever since I switched to AccuFast Earth-Friendly Needles, I reduced my packaging waste by 90%. Not only are they a great needle, but the folks at AccuFast plant a tree for every two boxes of needles I use in the clinic. By switching to AccuFast Needles, you'll be helping patients, planting trees, and joining a community of practitioners changing the world. Like our simple needle, being a part of the solution, it's simple too. Visit AccuFastNeedles.com/Cheological to learn how. Zach Louie, welcome to Cheological.
Thank you. Thank you for the welcome.
So here we are, hanging out, shooting the shit about Chinese medicine.
Absolutely. Good times, good times.
It is, isn't it? It's so funny. You know, I used to live in Seattle where I was around all kinds of Chinese medicine folk. We just hang out, go for walks, gab about medicine, drink tea, eat cookies, you know.
Eat cookies, do some Tai Chi, you know, do the arms behind the back, get the look in, right?
All kinds of stuff, you know. And now I'm in St. Louis. I have to get on the internet to hang out with my friends, but it works.
It works. It's not the same, but it works.
Well, I mean, in some ways it's, I'm not going to say it's better, but it opens up more opportunities. So you and I, several times, you know, like two time zones away. Actually, we're one time zone away.
What's one time zone?
But a lot of miles and in a different country.
Yeah, well.
I often am curious about what drew people into doing this work. You know, a lot of us didn't grow up with it.
Nope.
And, you know, it's kind of weird for plenty of folk. Mm-hmm. How did you find your way into this stuff?
It was a long journey. I'll say that it was not an expected journey, but it was a journey.
Unexpected journey.
Yes. It was, again, Asian kid growing up in Hamilton, Steel City, very similar to, like, you know, the Midwest mentality for young Americans. And it was one of these points where Toronto is the cosmopolitan city, like the queen city of at least Ontario. So I kind of lived a half-half life. I lived in Hamilton, which is very practical, Midwest vibes. And then you get Toronto, which doesn't want to admit it's Midwest vibes, but it is. And it really is a point where I started all this in a pursuit of knowledge of self. It was a point of I wanted to get into Asian spirituality. Growing up as a kid, you see the Kung Fu movies. You're like, yeah, is this real? And one thing led to another, and eventually one of the people I learned from literally said, hey, you're wanting to learn spirituality, you're wanting to learn magic, why don't you just go to a Chinese medicine person? I'm like, dude, you mean like needles and tasting mud? I know how this goes. Like, why would I go to anyone for this?
Needles and tasting mud.
Right, because I'm coming from a background of psychology and behavioral sciences and all this, even at like teenage years. And I'm coming from like looking from Kung Fu. I was like, why would I bother with the answers? How does this relate to anything I would learn from spirituality? One thing leads to another. I make the Kung Fu commitment where he's like, just go to this Chinese medicine person. I'm like, all right, fine. Go in, start learning. And it literally was like the, like, I shit you not. It's pretty much Kung Fu Panda. You go up the friggin' hill. You're like, am I here? And then there's a whole handoff thing where the parents with me, my mother in this context, and I was like, okay, are you going to teach my child like the Qigong? Are you going to teach him that? And the one teacher I learned from, she was like, yes, I will. So, you know, in Asian culture, the master-teacher relationship is a very different one than what most people think about teaching, where it's like, oh, it's just a commodity. It's not from Asian standards. So there was a handoff there where I was there every single day doing marketing homework, and then it was 4 hours of Qigong, translating Mandarin, which I'm a Cantonese speaker. So initially I was like, my mother and I were sitting there. It's like, what is this pidgin Chinese they're speaking? It sounds Chinese, but we don't get it. And then we get the tables flipped on. It's like, yeah, do know Mandarin is the official lingua franca, but growing up in like Eastern Canada, it was a large Cantonese population for the longest time. So that was like what I was used to. So getting this reality flip was like, well, actually, you're the minority speakers. We're like, what?
Yeah.
So I did Qigong. That got me into their pursuit of Chinese medicine, because I had to translate literally the book from Mandarin simplified to Chinese or into English from Chinese. And that's how I was learning my Chinese for the written standard of simplified. And from there, I also, once again, the student is ready.
Now, did you grow up with simplified Chinese or the complex?
I grew up with traditional.
Yeah. So when you know traditional Chinese, reading the simplified stuff, it's not easier.
It's not easier. It's kind of like, this sort of looks like a comic, but not really. Scorpion looks like a horse. What? So I went through a whole two-year journey of basically doing Qigong to understand the meridians, meditating on the points, physically massaging the points and doing these translations. And then at some point, I want to make a career out of this because, you know, who doesn't want to do Harry Potter and that life? And at the same time, on parallel, I met my master, Andrea Venmes, who's my spiritual master and teacher. And I was doing a parallel education system between magic and Chinese medicine. So I was getting really standing on the shoulders of giants at this point. And then I went to formal schooling for TCL.
Okay. Hang on here just one second. I remember learning the meridians. You know, we'd like draw on ourselves and we'd draw on our classmates. But nope. You're doing movements. You're feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
You learn them by doing the Qigong. It sounds like a pretty useful way to learn what the meridians are about. Does that give you like a sense or a character of the meridians? Like, because it seems to me the meridians at this stage of the game, they've got like a personality,
yeah,
in a sense.
And they most definitely do. And this is where, again, I sound like a heretic to most people where I'd say, like, does Chinese medicine really exist? Do meridians actually exist? Because with all the training I do, I take it from a meta perspective, given how Andrea has taught me and I work in multiple paradigms. Chinese medicine is just the one professional cap I wear. But I'm very familiar with chakras. At the point that we're talking about chakras and meridians, this is where it's like, well, do they both exist at once? Well, it depends who does it. If you believe in it, I mean, this is where we can talk about that whole narrative structure. However, going through the meditations in Qigong, I built the meridians in my body at that point.
You built them?
Right. Because naturally in TCM, you would say, well, they're naturally there. This is how you live. Well, yes, but chakras still exist. There's many other systems that exist. So which one's right and which one's wrong? It can't be all coinciding all at one time unless you're stuck in one particular paradigm.
If you have two paradigms, though, you have two lenses to view, feel, see, work with the body, though, yes?
Correct. And the narrative structures and the metaphors are completely different, yet they both still work.
Mm-hmm.
So this
Except
is
more handles.
Right. It gives you more handles. It gives you more lenses. But you still have to understand the metaphors and the context that they were in.
Tell me a little bit about building the meridians in your body.
So in terms of building the meridians, I start off even when I'm teaching students professionally, it's one, there's a line. Like we know this from dead men. We go through all those education systems of drawing the lines, feeling them out. What I had to do was literally press the point and see my body reaction. And then I'd say like, is this, what am I actually feeling kinesthetically? Did my breath go down? Did it move? Did it shift my mind? I would actually meditate with this. And then I was given, at least from this one teacher for Chinese medicine, she's like, well, think about the qi ball. And then she taught me how to do ice exercises and fireball exercises to the point to open up the meridian, depending on what the sensation was. So at that point, I'm already learning yin and yang just through the meditation aspects. And I'd be linking, oh, lung one to lung two. Why is this connection feeling this way? So I literally was doing massage, and then I was notating what my reactions were. And then I would actually correspond to the book and say, hey, that's actually kind of right. So it wasn't me reading something first. It was me experiencing the thing first.
You got it first in your physical sensate. That's pretty cool. I remember reading the books when I was in acupuncture school. And I knew acupuncture worked because it worked on me,
mm-hmm,
and it helped me. But I remember like in my first year, I'm reading these books and I'm going, you know, someone just wrote this shit in a book. Like anyone can write anything in a book.
Absolutely.
How do I know there's actually something here?
Right. And it really comes down to what's your results and what's your experience. Yeah. I think that's really where the buck stops off. Cause even like I was watching, you know, I'm always educating myself. They're like, you know, Marines are pretty much the formalized Marines we have. They came in the UN dynasty. Before then, everyone was debating what your meridians were, even what your points were. So really it's all kind of just made up. It just, we have kind of agreed at the moment what this is, which is kind of hilarious that it's just a consensus more than anything.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a provocative question.
Sure.
If we took that consensus away,
mm-hmm.
what would still be there?
I would probably.
In terms of the meridians.
In terms of the meridians, it's whatever you want them to be. Right? That is a provocative answer. It's whatever you want them to be. Because if I act as a Taoist priest, are these meridians or are they zodiac animals? If I'm working from Sa'am, are they meridians or are they bodhisattvas and buddhas? It's just an agreed line.
Different stories.
Correct.
Okay. So, and I just want to put a pin in something for a moment because I want to come back to it. Because you said something a little earlier, and I do want to swing back to it. You talked about magic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm just dropping a pin. I've studied a little bit of Sa'am, and I know it comes through a Buddhist tradition
mm-hmm.
originally. I've learned it from a guy who learned it from a wandering monk, actually. So that's been interesting. I hadn't thought about the meridians as bodhisattvas, but I have found using the Sa'am system and those very unique organ pairings,
mm-hmm.
which are nothing short of stunningly powerful,
mm-hmm.
I found that the meridians kind of have a personality to them. Hadn't thought about it as bodhisattvas, but I do think of them as having personalities.
Right. Now, the bigger question here, Michael, is what type of personality do they have based on your
yes.
experience of them? Because it's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah. Well, if they've got a certain characteristic,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't they kind of be somewhat in line? You know, if you're really grokking these meridians, if you're really using them, if you're getting to know them, like, for example, the gallbladder.
Right.
I wouldn't take the gallbladder as like a kick back, chill sort of energy. I wouldn't take it that way at all. I would take the gallbladder as kind of a scrappy, strong, here's my boundaries. Oh, and let me tell you, they're going to get enforced too.
Mm-hmm.
Gallbladder's in your face.
Absolutely.
I don't see the gallbladder as a kick back.
Well, again, it's now we get into, at least this is where it gets into, well, what is Chinese medicine? When we start looking at these meridians, we have to look at what your subconscious anchors are. You've been in school for how long before you even got your license? You got taught a certain thing. And even in the experience of Sa'am, there are certain realizations you had, but you yourself could get results other people may not have based on your experience, and that gets filtered through. That's all subconscious. So this is where, is that a reflection of the meridian or is that a reflection of you and the meridian itself directly?
Mm. My sense is the meridian has its own kind of character. You could say it's vibrating at its own level. Think about a guitar, the high E and the low E string, they're different, similar, but different,
mm-hmm.
right? So each of the meridians will vibrate in a different way. And of course, how you play that guitar is the you that plays the guitar.
Absolutely. And this is where, again, I would say the you that plays the guitar is the observer in this context. It doesn't change the guitar. The nature of a guitar is a guitar. Like the nature of a gallbladder is a gallbladder. How mm-hmm. I work with that gallbladder, it's personal at that point. So this
yeah.
is now, again, a reflection of yourself in relation to something that, say, is a line. Because this is, again, coming from the Chinese cosmological viewpoint of the world. So there are certain experiences that people say, the gallbladder probably is this, but can you make that guitar sing? Can you make mm-hmm. that gallbladder zing a certain way that only you can? So this comes back to, you have, at least in my perspective, there are certain metaphors that have been ingrained in your psyche at a deep level, because there's other people that would say gallbladder doesn't exist as this line. And I mean, I've seen the studies where they say a gallbladder channel is the stomach channel because for some reason they thought it was. And it just ended up being that, where they could only get stomach channel relationships with the gallbladder channel and vice versa, until someone said, you're absolutely wrong by the history. Then that broke that placebo effect, or that metaphor for them, and they could never get back.
Are you saying that the thoughts and maps that we have about the meridians gives the meridian their character?
Absolutely, because it's just an exploration of yourself.
So if I decided to see the gallbladder as a kick to, so if I decided mm-hmm. to see the gallbladder, and if I could see the gallbladder as this like powerful, quiet, laid back, strong kind of person, no outward energy, no, I got a boundary and don't you cross it, but that sort of like, you know, Navy SEAL look at somebody like, I don't need to do anything because, right. you know, I would take you apart.
Absolutely. And that could work. I mean, the funny thing about this is when you're mentioning these metaphors in reference to Buddhism, esoteric Buddhism specifically, because again, Sam is a Buddhist tradition, it's connected to the space, boundless space bodhisattva who has all those characteristics. Space.
Oh.
You don't need to do anything. But that's not how we would metaphorically understand it if we said, you know, your gallbladder is actually the rat from Taoism. That's two very different approaches to the same thing. And yet they both work.
So take me on a tour of the bodhisattvas of the meridians.
Sure. So this is where we will look at things, particularly let's just start at the liver meridian on this one, right? So liver is going to be the boundless space bodhisattva. He's particularly around like infinite space, infinite ideas that come from the spirit to the physical body. Now, if we think about the liver's metaphors of the Hun, that makes perfect sense why that would come as our approach. And he's about, again, most bodhisattvas and most Buddhas in the system where we're identifying them to these different meridians through the phases are going to have some relationship around ignorance and cutting through your issues. So that's very much connected to the Hun, about the vastness and clarity of that. And that goes into smooth flow of qi, storing of blood, expansive wisdom and nurturing of the essence of, like, you know, what you're going through your life, time, experiences. So that, when you think about liver characteristics, like, oh, of course, that kind of actually connects, right? Mm-hmm. When we talk about...
I can take that story in and invite it into the clinic, right. Yeah.
And then you would have something where, again, there's a double up on the bodhisattvas with some of these meridians, because this is your guardian eight bodhisattvas, which they are tied to the eight trigrams, but we could put them to the direct meridians if we know the chronoacupuncture, right? So like esoteric Buddhism actually breaks this down a lot. So it could also be connected to the lung meridian for this particular bodhisattva, because he doubles up. And then we think about lung in reference to the letting go of things, letting go of ideas, exhalation of things, and the governing of qi, right? And now you say infinite space. Does that sound like air? Possibly. Remember, wood isn't a native Buddhist concept until it comes to China. It would technically be air. So you start thinking about the liver's movements and you start thinking about this descending movements of the lung. You're like, oh, okay, this bodhisattva can do both. So this is a qi bodhisattva that circulates everything. Well, if you have limitless space, yeah, you have all the space to move things in the body. So that would be a double up for this particular one. There's going to be a few that do a double up.
So there's some bodhisattvas attached to meridians. Now, in this case, we have the lung and the liver. They're right next to each other on the clock. Are these doubled up bodhisattvas, do they always have that kind of relationship?
They are mostly referencing the zodiac animals. So that's where we could make a chronoacupuncture standard of organ clock, absolutely. Because again, they all kind of links into a nice little narrative there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the next one we have is the rabbit zodiac with Manjushri. This is the wisdom bodhisattva, and this is about the large intestine. So can you purify your knowledge? Can you eliminate and have clarity about what you're getting rid of? Because that's wisdom. A lot of people end up thinking like, well, how does large intestine go into wisdom? That's not the thing I would think of. But you have to let go of things to gain things, and you have to process them, and then you have to eliminate them. So again, usually...
And know what to let go of.
And let go of, which ultimately...
And know what to let go of.
Right. And ultimately, it's like, what are you letting go of? The illusions. So you, like, what's the bowel movement? It's separating pure from impure. So that's the breaking down of literally issues that would hinder you. So this particular bodhisattva is used for studying when we started doing the rituals and just wisdom in general. So clarity, wisdom, studying, academics, really.
Large intestine. All right, let's move along.
Like you're going to get kind of like more of the organ clock moving through things. So the next thing is going to be this is going to be of stomach, yang earth. So this is where I'm going to butcher the name because, again, it's more about like Sanskrit here, but Samyutabraddha Bodhisattva. And this is about universal equality, about being able to nourish things and view the interconnectedness through sustenance, because it's about practice of things, applying it. So you look at the rotting and ripening, you look at the origin of body fluids with the stomach, you're like, okay, you're talking about this is a practice, like literally get things done and apply it. That's yang earth. So you're like, all right, that one-to-one kind of makes sense again.
Okay.
And then this bodhisattva also moves to the next earth element, which is spleen. Yin earth, yang earth. So this is, again, this bodhisattva was actually used for females. You would pray to this bodhisattva for feminine issues of any persecutions and things like that. So this is where you can get the stability, you can get the nourishment, you can get the support. That's the transformation and transportation. That's the governing the four limbs. Again, going back to our practice aspect. But it's also because you have this idea of the feminine being worked through, which is hidden, right? And this, again, you only know what you do by doing things. And that gets into alchemy, essentially.
Oh, boy. Okay. Alchemy. You know what?
We could continue down the line, but there's a lot.
we could, but I think we've got a taste of it. Maybe we'll come back and do some more later. Earlier you said magic. Now you're talking alchemy. I remember as a kid, those things seemed really cool. And as an adult, it seemed both less possible and certainly more trouble than I suspected it might be worth. A lot of cultivation goes into things like alchemy. So it seems to me. So tell me a little bit about magic and alchemy.
I don't view them as separate, actually. To do magic is to do essentially the great work. What is the great work? Whatever you want to be, right? So my general metrics are magic can skew the probabilities to make your life better. There are certain skill sets you have to learn to do that, but it skews probabilities of reality. So if you need to do certain things, it's going to skew the probability, but in the process of skewing probabilities, you need to figure out yourself. You can't just say, hey, I want to do money magic and get money. You have to go through all the issues of why you don't think you deserve money, why you don't want to expand your money, all those relationships that you got taught. You have to deprogram yourself for that. So this ends up being, it's alchemy, because you have to give up those shadow issues, those hidden aspects of you, and say like, hey, why don't I love money? Like, why would I not date money? And then you have to look at yourself and be like, do I really want this in my life? And if you do, you know you might have some hard traumas you might have to heal. If you don't, then you've already said, I don't want this experience of life. And that's okay too. So this really depends on what you want. But no matter what process of magic you aim for, ultimately to, let's just say, better your life in a results-driven manner, you have to alchemize whatever the issues are to get that result in reality.
And alchemizing the issues is a cooking away, a burning away of the shadowy stuff.
It's a transformation of something to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So what you would deem as possibly negative gets transformed into a positive aspect. Your demons become angels. Your angels become demons. And this goes back to Buddhism, where they say, well, it doesn't really matter. It's all illusions anyways. If you're going to tell yourself a lie, you might as well enjoy the lie, because it's all just suffering otherwise.
Or make it a useful lie.
Which gets into a whole thing, right? So even thinking about, like, going back to the Bodhisattva piece, it's like, I was misquoting myself. It's actually a 1,000-arm Guanyin for gallbladder in reference to the rat for gallbladder. But this is where the gallbladder, in reference to what we were discussing earlier, it's like, what happens if it's a cool guy? What happens if it's a chick with 1,000 arms that can take care of everything all at once? Gallbladder can do that, right? So this is where we can look at this and say, what is the more convenient lie to make my life successful? It's not fake it till you make it. It's not quite that.
Hello, everyone. Anne Cecil Sturman here. A working knowledge of the 8 extraordinary channels from the unbroken oral tradition of acupuncture is valuable beyond words. The power of these channels is tremendous if the practitioner has well integrated diagnostic, theoretical, and practical skill. You'll be familiar with Dumai, the governor channel or the sea of yang, the primal reservoir of yang, which ultimately finances all movement and growth. But this channel also governs the ability to self-determine. The psycho-emotional presentation of your patients can be matched to a classical activation of this channel, clearing impedance in the free flow of yang qi to body, mind, and spirit. I'd like to share with you the marvelous potency of the Du channel in a full-length live treatment video from the seminar I taught last year in Melbourne, Australia. It's at annececilsturman.com/sinews2024. Click on the Jump to Free Teaching button or see the link on my Instagram page at annececilsturman. Thanks, Michael. Back to you.
No, you know, I don't think there is such a thing as fake it till you make it. I've heard that, and I think it takes you wide of the mark because you know if you're faking it. There's only working it till you get it. Because if you fake it till you make it, you'll never make it.
So this is where, you know, what do we do as acupuncturists? What do we do as healers? We take someone's issue of health and we give them a narrative that they can work with. And then we have experience and we believe in what we do. If we didn't, we wouldn't do it in the first place as an acupuncturist. And then that changes a narrative for them. So they can have a new healthy life, whatever that is.
So is what you're saying here, Zach, it's helpful in the process of cultivation to have useful illusions.
I would say if the illusions bring you closer to what you wish for. But that is a question that you have to analyze yourself. What do you wish and will? Because you can have illusions that aren't helpful. And you can just be like, it feels good. It's not about feeling good. It's like, where does this go? How do you live the dream? And what steps does it take to get there?
Tell me a little more about that. Because I don't know a whole lot about Buddhism other than there's a lot of sitting.
Sometimes.
I mean, if you're at a Zen center, you're working like you're in the military. But there's also a very keen focus on sort of like clarity and what's not illusion. Maybe I've got that wrong. You know, I'm not a Buddhist. I've only done a little meditation. So help me, because I thought I just heard you saying that illusion, if it's in line with what you wish and will, it's a helpful, useful thing. Did I hear that right?
You did. This is where if we take the assumption that life is suffering, and that's the baseline Buddhist premise, how do you get away from suffering? Well, you're not going to get away from suffering. That's just part of living. So then it comes back to, is the lemon worth the squeeze? What is worth it to you? And this is a bodhisattva vow. This is like, again, we can talk about the 10 different layers of the different realms, which are established in esoteric Buddhism. And each realm that's on top of the other one has more choice. When you're at the hell realms, you almost have no choice. It's automated. When you're at the Buddha realm, this is when you have all the choices and you can basically do a sandbox and you can just create because, well, why wouldn't you create? It's just fun. So you have more established choices at the Buddha realm than you would, say, the other realms below it.
I hadn't thought about that before. And that makes a lot of sense. The more choice you have, the less hellish your life is. You know, what's a hellish life? You have no choice. You are at the whim and will of everything around you. The more choice you have, the more options you have. Ooh, options are usually...
Options are good.
They're usually pretty good.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, wow, I don't have to eat oatmeal. I can eat sushi.
Right. Or you can have a Wagyu beef or whatever you want. Right? It's just the experience at that point. And this is where, at least Buddhism, would take it, and this is where Andrea Vimes and I are writing a book on like Buddhist sorcery work, essentially saying like, okay, let's practically make this something that can make your life better. Because a lot of people say, just meditate. Meditating does, it's nice, but that could be escapism too. Let's literally get our hands dirty and make this a contact sport and go through your issues. Because this is where it's kind of like, okay, you're in the hell realm. You have no choices. How many people come to our sessions feel like they have no choices? Okay. Then I could work the meridians from Sa'am in a certain way, because remember, Sa'am's an enlightenment system, essentially. I view it very close to Reiki in many ways, just with, you know, energy works a little bit different on the way you do the needles. But both of them are basically, how do you get people out of suffering or give them more choice so they can choose different options of suffering? Because we're not going to get out alive. We're all going to die. So at least make it a YOLO trip where they can expand past what they think they can conceive as possible. So from the hell realms, you have no choice. The next realm is the hungry gross realm. You are craving something, and you know, when the dead die, possibly, because no one knows, so you're dead, they might have a certain craving that they have, and they are basically now acting in a certain way to fulfill that craving, whatever it is. So there's lots of people that have addictions that just want to fulfill one thing. And then we can keep progress up. It's like, okay, they have a little choice. It's a little sentient that they act this way, but we can think lots of people that don't. And the next one is now the beast realm or the nature realm, which is a little bit politicized in my opinion, but it's reproduction, sleep, eat, right? They would say...
Politicized in what way?
They would generally say the beast realm people, animals are dumb. I don't think animals are dumb whatsoever. I think they're more honest. It's just they have limited choices, right? But a lot of Buddhism would say, no, like, they're dumb. It's like ignorant. It's like, what? They're nature. It's like, you're going to call your dog dumb? No, a dog's just going to be a dog, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of a throwing shade there at that realm, right?
Well, it's a more instinctual realm, absolutely, wouldn't you say?
Right? And it doesn't make it better or worse.
Mm-hmm. They got more pork,
right?
Going
they got
on in there.
More things happening. That's okay. Right? From really all the realms, you're really trying to say in Buddhism, can you work with all the realms? Right? Can you be in all the realms? You could be trapped in all the realms, technically, aspects of you in certain times, because the Michael that's on the podcast right now with me having a discussion around Buddhism and acupuncture and things like that in Chinese medicine is not the same Michael in clinic. There's a different mask, and that's a different Michael than the one going to, hanging out with family and friends. That's a different Michael. Mm-hmm. We wear these masks all the time. Buddhism's just very honest about it and says, you're wearing a different mask, at least explore it, milk it as far as you can, and don't be attached to it, because it's just a theater act anyways.
So enjoy the mask you're wearing while you're
correct.
Wearing the mask.
And if you're present and aware of it,
no harm,
there
no
is
foul.
No foul. And you're just having fun. And the more choices you have, because you're not attached to those issues, or you're not, it is attachment, really, then you have the freedom to do other things. And that's where it ties back to Sa'am. That's actually what we're giving people options for. This is why we get dramatic results with it. Like, I've done lots of Sa'am type of treatments on people, and their life changes. That's what I would expect Chinese medicine to do, too, though. However, with a Buddhist lens, it's pretty impactful. Where you're like, am I releasing this person's karma? You are. They're not in the loop anymore from those traumas of the past. And you've used a metaphor through the five phases and meridians, even past the Buddhist metaphor. Say we don't even add that layer. You've changed their lives because you've switched their elements. And you rebalance them in a way that can move them forward.
When you treat people like this, the way that I've learned it is you see what's excess, what's deficient. What's deficient, you'll tonify it with the counterbalance, use these counterbalance meridians, right? I have looked through all kinds of old books, and I haven't found nowhere that talks about the Sa'am organ pairs, right? I mean, we know about lung, large intestine, right? Yin yang, okay? Connected pair on the arm. We know about like the great tie-in channel, lung and spleen. But lung and stomach? I mean, it's brilliant. Hand and foot, earth and metal. But I haven't found these pairs mentioned anywhere in any of our, you know, great source of old books. Where the hell did this stuff come
from? Well, this is where it just really depends on how you want to go about it. Like, you know, let's take lung-stomach combination. If, and I usually explain it this way to people when I'm teaching, it's like, okay, lung and spleen, we know that's Tai Yin. We know that they're dating, they're in a couple, right? Like they're essentially married. Well, is, and internal, external relationships. So lung to the large intestine, we know there's that combination too. So when we think about it, just even on the base premise, lung, if its bestie is large intestine, or let's not even say bestie, let's say they're married to large intestine, but their bestie is spleen, right? In this context, stomach's in that relationship again. They're both, it's the yang ming, foot-hand dynamics. Mm-hmm. But you think stomach's going to care about the lung as much? It's not a bestie, and it's not married to it. So it can be a little more objective. Now, where does this come from? It probably actually comes from the zodiac, and it comes from the organ clock. When you look at the actual pairings of the times.
I've looked at it through the organ clock. That was one of the ways that I was attempting to make sense of it. And basically, you just skip.
Right, you do skip.
You skip an organ. And that, and there's your pairs right there.
So there's that. And that we do see that in the historical discourse. Now, if we really want to go back and be like, well, it's off of wandering monks in Korea. Wandering monks in Korea did acupuncture, and they probably had connections to astrology, which they do. So this is where we can even further say, okay, did you pair it through the organ zodiacs? And that's another interpretation, because all monks did know astrology historically. That was just a norm of what their duties were to some degree.
So we could probably also look at this through the relationship of the animals.
Correct.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah, I hadn't sat down and looked at that. So help me out here. Like the animal for heart and the animal for urinary bladder. What are
they? So you got monkey for urinary bladder, and you have heart being the horse.
So horse and monkey, what's...
Horse and monkey. Heart is basically, you think about, like, that's a social animal. It's usually in the protectors, but the monkey is usually in the trine with the dragon. And there's another animal that's not coming off the top of my head, but they are the leaders and rockers of the world. So you needed a protector in reference to the illumination, because bladder, when we look at its metaphors through the mythology, it's actually about illumination. And then you have the horse, which is literally spirit. And at that point, if you get illumination and spirit, that it makes an easy combination. We start thinking about fire, water dynamics.
Illumination.
Transformation. Transformation and separation, right? Like the normal yang functions. Mm. So this is where monkey is an intelligent animal by the zodiac standards. You look at it and be like, all right, cool. We have this organ animal representation. And again, that's only one interpretation of the zodiacs. There's two technically. So it gets even more messy when we start breaking it down.
Yeah. Do you work much with the stems and branches or look into that?
I do. I was trained in it, so.
So that's another thing that I keep wondering. Is there something within the stems and branches that speaks to these organ pairs?
Absolutely, right? So again, you remember, the origin of Chinese medicine is actually from shamans and priests. They were all kind of working in one thing, and then you get a scholarly class that says, okay, you know what? We don't want to go through the spiritual way, Miyazaki experience. No, thank you. I don't want to do a deep dive like that, but we can now do the finger pointing to the moon. We could see what you're doing. We could observe what you're doing, and then maybe we can copy it, but not go through the initiative rites and basically saying, okay, the spirits have called you. We want to do it on our own time. So this is where the energy paradigm comes in versus spirit paradigm. So when we start looking at the heavenly stems and 12 earthly branches, this definitely has an implication, especially for, again, anyone that's somewhat learned in esoterics, because astrology was a core piece. You might say not everyone did astrology, but it was kind of a norm if you were a priest to some degree. Shamans might not do that. But priests would most definitely probably do that, and then they would go specialize into being astrologers later on.
Were the stems and branches seen as astrology, or were they just seen more as cosmology? Here's the big clock that things unwind around.
Sure, there's no separation, though. If you understand that it's a big clock, you can predict what's going to happen, and then you manipulate essentially time and space to a certain degree, which goes back to, can you skew your probabilities?
So help me out here with how the stems and branches, what in the stems and branches shows us this Om-Oregon pairs? Or maybe I'm asking for something entirely too direct.
But well, you have the heavenly pairs. Those get into your yin-yang phases, right? And then you have your 12 earthly zodiacs.
So the heavenly yin-yang pairs, for example.
Right. So you would have something like Ding being yin-fire. You'd have Bing being yang-fire, for example, right?
So you have yin and yang fire.
You have yin and yang fire. You literally have yin and yang, water, etc. So those are really going to be your characteristics that you put in front of the zodiac animals. And they can change depending on the year. You have a 60 cycle. So once you understand that, now how do we break it down even further? Well, you have your core yin and yang pairs, and then you have your 12 earthly zodiac animals that represent the years of the month, possibly. That's one interpretation. But at least you have it to possibly an animal that you can correspond to directly. Now, that's pretty totemistic and animalistic in terms of working that system. And then from there, we can then say, well, do these end up being the 12 mythical rivers in China? They could be. Meridians are generally tied to rivers in China on the cosmology. So you have an animal piece and you have a river piece. Where this ties into Sa'am now is, well, we do characterize the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to zodiac animals. That's your direct connection. So is it the chicken or the egg? Did the zodiac animals and 10 heavenly stems come first? Absolutely. But there's probably no accident why they put certain Bodhisattvas and Buddhas to certain meridians based on the characteristics.
Okay. So if I'm following this, we have the heavenly stems and branches with the yin and yang of fire in each of the phases. There's your 10. Comes down into earth, and just like us, as we come down into earth, we get two fires. So now you've got 12 meridians, or you could have the 12 bodhisattvas, or you could have the 12 animals. There's different lenses that we can view this through. And then each of those, of course, have their own sort of sets of relationships with each other.
Correct.
So like going back into the Neijing, it may not have the filters and stories that show us those Sa'am pairs. But if we look at some of this more esoteric stuff, we might see some of those relationships.
Correct. And if you actually have relationships, and we go a step further and say, okay, do I want to have a relationship with this Buddha or Bodhisattva from a Buddhist lens? Well, if you know how to do the prayer work with them, they'll tell you things about the person. So this gets into, do you believe it's an energy model or a spirit model? In the model we're discussing within Buddhism, you absolutely work in both. So when you're working with the spirits, like let's just say gallbladder with Guanyin of 1,000 arms. If you have a relationship with her, you've done enough prayer work with her, she is a force outside of you, and maybe not, right? But let's just say she's her own separate entity with a separate consciousness that is limitless, at least in terms of our time configuration. Because you can work with her and someone else can work with her at the same time. It's the same thing and not, because your subconscious mind's filtering it still, right? So it's a unique relationship with that spirit. So at the point that you might be doing needles with somebody, you might say, well, what's up with them? And she might say, hey, they're having these issues. Now, I'm not saying you have to do that. You could just do it by the book with just the needles and not have any spirit conversations. But that is definitely a way to understand things. And you could probably get her to be like, well, what's happening with the gallbladder? Because that's your association. She'd be like, oh, well, this person's having this. Why don't you try working on this emotion? Because they need more compassion. Very different relationship now in the treatment
room. That's just a whole different kind of psychology, isn't it?
Correct.
Would it be fair to say that this meditation on the 12 Buddhas is a kind of Eastern psychology?
I would say yes and no, because if we're saying psychology from a standard of the Western perspective of it's all in your head, I would challenge the notion and say that's a model. Psychology is one model that we can use, but it does not justify things outside of the model. unless you say, well, how big is your mind? And that could be a Buddhist conversation there. Because generally the paradigms we could use is that there's an energy model, there's a spirit model, there is a psychology model, and they're most likely all interchanging at different times for you. So I'm never going to be against psychology. I absolutely love it. However, I also have seen things in a spirit model that break psychology altogether.
Tell me a little bit more about a spirit model as compared with an energy model.
Sure. So a spirit model assumes that there's a consciousness that you interact with in a relationship. So this is where I can have a conversation with a spirit if I built a relationship with them and say, like, hey, buddy, what's up? And that obviously relationships take management, but they are outside of you. So
and
this
time
is,
and attention.
And time and attention. Whereas in an energy model, it says this is a volume game. I don't need to worry about my relationship with energy. I just need to know if it's good energy or bad energy. I know that's a very simplified version of it for the energy model. However, you're talking about volume. If everything's energy, it's just the quality of energy now and the density
okay.
of it.
And then how does the psychological model fit in?
The psychological model fits in being, well, what are the psychology rules that we know in Western viewpoints? If it's all in your head, then it gets into things like neurolinguistic programming. It gets into reframes. It gets into your thought processes. Right. And you're really breaking it down. We do have the actual science and it's very effective on that. However, psychology initially came out of what? Magnetism and all these other things directly out of the magical practices. And now it's more formalized into science and it works well. We've just really codified it down to the most efficient pieces. So you can do all three. And there's other ones too. However, you can do all three of them at the same time. Because remember, a spirit might tell you something and it might absolutely be right because it can see you outside time and space. It's not bound to the physical premise right now and here. So they might be able, you know, you might just be a blip in their eyes and they can still act on your behalf. This is why you want relationships possibly with them. But that's also dangerous because if you piss them off, what happens? They can act outside of you directly. So this is where the scholars in Chinese medicine... And we see that whole idea said, now we're not going to deal with that. Screw it. I don't want my life screwed up by these things. I don't want to piss off that thunder god. Like, or I don't want to placate the thunder god. So energy model came about saying, well, how about we just say it's energy and maybe it's a spirit, but let's not worry about that. Let's just talk about the quality of energy that I can reproduce.
So it sounds like there is some danger in working with the spirit model.
Oh, absolutely. There's dangers working with any model, though. Now, I would say that clearly. Even energy, you can get screwed. We see that with medical qigong all the time, right? But with the spirit model in particular, yeah, there's going to be some risk because, again, the assumption is there's relationships in play and these things, being the spirits, can work outside of you because they do. You say, I don't want to believe that spirits exist. Okay, that's fine. But you've just locked off a whole possibility of how the world could work. Need to go into that frame. It's just a frame or model. However, it's handy to have things work outside of you if you have relationships, but they pull some things that you would never imagine.
I suspect it would take some guidance and training.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You're not going to get it out of a book.
Well, you could actually, but you still
could
need
you?
To have training. Yeah. I mean, my master's book, Hands-on Chaos Magic, takes you step by step on that. For Andrea
Hands
Vidmes.
On Chaos Magic.
Hands on Chaos Magic by Andrea Vidmes. So, I mean,
what a great title.
Yeah. And it looks at the model in a step by step manner of saying, like, how do you get rid of your issues? How do you, it's a workbook essentially. I've used it for years. And it really is one of these things where it's a step by step exercise of saying, okay, you got to get your head on straight. You want to talk to spirits? You can't even get your head on straight. Are you meditating? Can you even focus? No. Let's talk about that first before we even talk about things that are completely alien to your consciousness because they can't affect
when
you.
When I was a teenager, I loved reading the Carlos Castaneda series of books. You familiar with those? I thought you might be. And, you know, it's kind of entertaining because Carlos is, you know, he's a dope. He's kind of stupid. But Power has pointed him out as someone worth... worth cultivating. And so he ends up with his teacher, Don Juan, who's like always playing tricks on him and just giving him shit. And like asking him to get his shit together, because there's a whole world outside of your constructs, but it takes some work to get there.
Absolutely. And it's work. I mean, everyone's like, Zach, you can do all this badass stuff. I'm like, one, I have an excellent master, and I'm very grateful that I can learn everything from him on this. Same time, the shit's scary. Let's be straight. It's like, yeah, you might live in anime. Like, I love anime and mangas. My life is like that some days. We're like, oh, we have to do an exorcism. Shit. Why? Why do we have to do an exorcism? I just want to go home and...
Yeah, why me? Why today?
Like, I remember, like, in particular, I was in a student clinic. And again, I was learning from my one medical Qigong teacher, right? And he was actually, like, running the clinical runs. And, like, me and this indigenous guy, like, you know, we're good friends. And we're running teams. And literally, we both look at each other. And then we look at the teacher. And he's like, you want to do this? I'm like, and it was just, like, this look that we all had. Because we knew some shit was going down. And I'm like, well, you know how to do exorcisms. So, yeah, I guess I'm going to have to do this. Because no one else is here that's going to do it. And the teacher's like, all right, well, if you need help, I'm outside. I'm like, this ain't my first rodeo. Ain't going to be my last rodeo. So,
and this is a teacher who knew about this?
Absolutely. Stuff? Right. So this particular teacher, like, I've been very fortunate with my teachers. I mean, I learned off of 3 Imperial Physicians. So they knew their shit. And this was one of them. And he's like, well, bro, we got you. I'm like, you know, I'm also learning directly as a folk priest and I do magic and I'm, you know, shaman on things. He's like, yep, I know. But if you need the backup, I'm here. So we go in, ended up being a large intestine issue and was very complicated because there was a lot of abuse, unfortunately, for this client around it and thought process issues about the attachments to not letting go. It was just it was very unfortunate for that client, but we broke it. In a few sessions, and people would say, well, did you do ghost ones? I'm like, no, I basically did large intestine 11 or, you know, stomach 36, LI5, SI5, basic points. But it's not the needles that matter here. Was my going into the mentality. My mentality was, I'm going in and I'm going to win this for this person because they need it. I'm going to act.
In recent years, the Sa'am acupuncture style has generated significant interest and a loyal and growing following. In the Sa'am approach, a precise diagnosis leads to a 4-needle treatment to address the 5-element and 6-chi imbalances in the body. The 4 needles target the controlling and generating cycles. It's common using this method for the needle sensation to be stronger than in many other styles. Thus, the choice of needle becomes important. The Unico brand of needles lends itself to both strong and gentle techniques. These superior needles are made of uncoated Japanese surgical stainless steel and feature the best guide tube on the market with its unique beveled edge. Additionally, Unico needles have a tensile property that helps with freehanding needles into Jingwell points and allows you to more easily feel the arrival of qi. Blue Poppy is the exclusive importer and distributor of Unico needles. Use the code QI2024 to save 10% off Unico needles at www.bluepoppy.com. You'll be glad you did. I'd like to dig into this just a little bit because the language gets a little slippery here. So, exorcism. Does that mean that they were possessed by something?
Yes, they were possessed by their attachments internally.
Well, wouldn't that be most of us around many things?
Again, you have external demons and you have internal demons. There's no separation to a shaman.
So help me understand this, like the difference between some kind of possession and a troublesome attachment that shows up as a kind of trauma that you would get a DSM-5
right
diagnosis for.
So this is where the difference on this is how much is this out of their everyday character, right? So if someone's being possessed by an internal aspect within them that is still part of them, they will actually kind of act differently. Now, we're not talking about external possession work. That's a different thing altogether, right? This was clearly an internal issue the person literally did not want to let go of. Hence why I went with the metaphor of large intestine. We're breaking this and we're burning it up. And you're going to let this go, whether you like it or not, because you came here for help. And they literally said, I have issues on this and I need to let it go. And they thought they were actually like having a schizophrenic breakdown on things. And I'm like, no, this is not it, because there was external factors here, unfortunately, of abuse. So that's not you, but you've internalized it. So I'm no therapist at this point. I said, you need to go through a therapist, but we'll do the best we can with acupuncture, which, you know, we did the energy work and things. And then the person was able to have bowel movements. They weren't having bowel movements for a while because of this.
That's interesting. I've had a number of patients, you know, I always ask them about their bowels, and some, there are some people, it's like, yeah, I have a bowel movement every 3 to 5 days. Oh, how long has it been like that? Forever. So, you know, you get them on occasion. We could literally say they're holding on to shit, or maybe there's something that's got a hold of them.
And in this particular point, they like, the reason why I call it an exorcism is because literally parts of them were like, we're not giving this up. All right. Well, the person clearly came for help. It doesn't matter if it's them or an aspect of them. This is not imperative for the goal of what they're asking for.
Do you find with a treatment like this that sometimes there'll be some like decompensating that goes on as they shift from a stable and suffering pattern to something that they're more freed of?
Well, yes, because that means they have to give up the wet blanket. And this is where you have to literally, from, if we're thinking about energy work, it's like nature hates a void. Nature hates a hole. So if you're going to take that out and purify it and transform it, you have to replace it with something. So if you end up having to do acupuncture, energetic surgery on somebody, and saying, okay, we're cutting this part of you out because it's not redeemable for whatever reason, then you have to replace it with something else altogether. Now, that's a little bit beyond most acupuncture. That would get into medical Qigong and more, I would say, classical acupuncture, actually, but not your TCM acupuncture.
Tell me more about the classical acupuncture. How would that...
So the classical acupuncture, remember, the metaphor is needles or swords. So we were the surgeons back in the day. Even our metaphors, when you talk about it, it's like encircle the chi, rush it. It sounds like military terminology. So one of the ways I was learned was we literally can look at the art of war and talk about acupuncture, because all the tactics they use in the art of war is directly metaphors for what we would use. So this is a very conflictual point. And the origins of acupuncture is actual exorcism, meaning you're taking off attachments of spirits from people. Through bloodletting or other means. And moxibustion was to help illuminate and reheal or scar so they don't come back, whether it's internal or external again. So classical acupuncture, there's two different variants, I would say. It's like, are you doing the scholarly acupuncture? That's what's mostly talked about by me people these days. Are you doing more of this more contact sport magical acupuncture? Because you can read a book and experiment, and that's more classics. Contact sport says, what's my issues? How do I transform my limitations? Because I am the limiter at this point for what could happen with a client.
For sure. The more experience we have in the, I would say, greater access to choices and stories and, well, energies or spirits for that matter, as we've been talking about it in this particular conversation, it will give you more... It'll give you more access to possibilities.
Absolutely. And this is where it's like, you know, I joke around about acupuncture, but I do some acupuncture, and I've had people, when I've done student clinics, I've like, students will look at me and we have conversations, and everyone kind of knows I'm a four needle person. So they're like, well, what would you do here? We had one client, particularly young, I won't say young, but it's like mid 20, early 30s. Literally has shoulder pains, recycled around the student clinic. It's the first time I saw her, but she's been recycled over and over. She's like, it keeps coming back, keeps coming back. And I look at her and I'm in a doctor, like professional mindset as a practitioner, right? I mean, the joke is Zach's in Dr. House mode, right? So this is where I'm like, you come in, you get your issues done. And and I say to students, I'm like, well, what do you want to do? The shoulder pain keeps coming back. The treatment notes have keep saying, and everyone keeps doing local treatments or distal treatments and nothing's sticking. What's the issue? And they're like, we don't know. I'm like, what's the tongue? What's the pulse? They're like, it's this, this. And I'm like, all right, so let me go talk to this client. I go talk to this client and I look at them and I kind of like dead eye them in a weird way in terms of like I'm getting a psychic impression off of the energy. And I said, do you want this issue resolved? And the answer is like, yes, I do. I'm like, no, do you really want this issue resolved? And then they say, yes. And then I say third time, it's like talking Rumpelstiltskin at this point, right? I said, well, I think we can actually make movement on the shoulder pain today. And I know if we do make progress on this, your life is going to be a very different life. I can't predict what is going to change in your life, but change is always going to be hard. So are you ready for that change to get rid of the shoulder pain? Because that's what I think actually is being presented today as a choice for you or an option for you. And the person kind of looks at me and is like, what do you mean by change? I said, I have no clue. I just know there's going to be a radical shift in your life. Do you want to take it or not?
Yeah. Are you up for this?
Are you up for this?
Are you up for this? Yeah.
And then she looks at me and she was confident. She's like, yes, I want to get rid of the shoulder pain. And I'm like, all right, fine. I'll talk to the students and I'll tell them the treatment. And then I basically prescribed the triple energizer or San gel tonification. So this is triple energizer 2 sedated, bladder 66 sedated, tonify wood points being the triple energizer 3 and gallbladder 41. I said, put it on the right side. She's a female, right? And she was having a left side problem anyways. So you were already doing this yin yang opposites. And then I said,
Very powerful.
And I said, in particular though, what's your needle order? Because that's our secret sauce when it comes to acupuncturists. It's like, that's our dosing, essentially. I'm like, what's your needle order? They're like, I don't know. And I said, do you think she's in her head about things? Or what do you think? And then they said, well, yeah, she's in her head. Look at her. I'm like, well, what do you need to do then? You need to draw down the water, and then you need to do wood points. Water generates wood. And then they're like, okay. So they did that particular order. Few minutes later, person's like, oh, the shoulder pain's completely gone. But then they, in the midsize of the treatment, is like, oh, it got worse again. And they're like, Zach, you got to come in. Things are getting worse. I'm like, no, they're not getting worse. It's exactly what they're working through it. And then I said, just do the bar 66. Do that point. And they kind of manipulated the tonification. They turned it left. And then things started to open up again. I was like, okay, good. At the end of the session, there was no shoulder pain or very little shoulder pain. And they're like, oh, that was fantastic. I'm like, yeah, but you were working through stuff there. Let's not like kid yourself there. You knew you were working through stuff. The next week later, they come back in, they book with the students, and we asked, like, hey, how's it going? They're like, no shoulder pain. Then we said, okay, that's great. What do you want to work on? They're like, oh, there's nothing really I want to work on. So the person was very forthright. They're like, yeah, I broke up with a troublesome partner right after the session. Do you feel bad? Do you feel any remorse? No, I feel the best I felt in years. Okay. So we can break that down from triple energizer and say, what happened there? If triple energizer is like the hidden puppet master that controls all the organs and works for the minister fire and all this other stuff, we can break that down. But this is...
I had not thought of the triple burners, the hidden puppet master.
Right. I usually call it like, quote unquote, the God mod. It's kind of like everything plays around in it, but it can do its own thing, right? So this is where that person had a sacrifice, the sacrifice for the shoulder pain. And literally the shoulder pain was a bad relationship.
Okay. You were just talking about needle order. I mean, I think needle order is important too. Generally speaking, when I do Sa'am, I'm generally tonifying more than dispersing. And so the way that I think about it, like if I was doing the triple burner, if I wanted to tonify it, I'd start with gallbladder 41, right? I'm turning on the wood, on the wood channel. It's going to go up to that triple burner fire, right? So then I do triple burner three, okay? Would point on the fire channel. And then I'm going to do triple burner two. I'm going to turn it off on the channel. And then finally, I'm going to go to the source and turn it off there as well.
Right.
Right? Which is, man, such an imbalanced treatment, man. We're like totally turning up one channel and we're turning off taking off the brakes.
Yeah, and I think it really depends.
So I usually think of it that way, but if I'm hearing you right, you started with the urinary bladder 66 because you wanted to draw down into the water. That's a really interesting. I hadn't thought about looking at those kind of dynamics. There's actually quite a bit you could do with those four needles, depending on how you wanted to direct that.
Well, this is where, I mean, I talked about this actually earlier in a lecture today, actually, where I was presenting four needle techniques in reference to orthopedics. And I was discussing with the students, and the one person really got in. It's like, oh, you know, there's so many layers to Sa'am. I'm like, yes, there is. But we're not even touching the core of it. We're not talking about the Buddha stuff. We're not even talking about how the elemental correspondences is. But as an acupuncturist with four needles, you essentially have 16 different treatments. Because depending on how the order of operations goes, you have a whole different result. So you have to be very clear what you're doing in reference to how these organ functions work. And then when you take them out, it's where do you want to leave them off on what organ function? And where are you shifting the energy?
Wow, that's a whole other layer that I had not considered. That's interesting. I'm really excited to go into clinic tomorrow and see how that might play.
Because this is how you tweak your acupuncture dosings, per se, right?
Well, it's not just your dosing, it's your directionality.
Absolutely.
It's more than dose. To some degree, it's dose. But it's also like who's playing lead guitar here?
And depending which one goes first and which one goes last and which one exits, and this is where this goes back to, again, those basics, like what are the chi movements? What are the organ functions? Because you can stimulate them just through those four needles. And depending which way you want to guide it, it's a whole different type of treatment, even though it seems so simple.
Yeah. Do you do much training with this Sa'am acupuncture, or do you tend to do tonifying more?
I actually go through all systems. So I go through the heating system, I go through the cooling system, I go through tonification, I go through the sedating formulas. So I do all four pretty consistently depending. Now, draining versus tonification, depending on which set, I actually honestly don't do a lot of manipulations. I just stick them in. And then I'm done.
Mm.
And that seems to work.
Yeah. No, I think what I meant here was like draining a channel as opposed to tonifying a channel.
Oh, okay. So in that context, I would say I tonify more than I drain.
Mm. Yeah. Have you got a thought behind that? Why do you tend to tonify more?
Well, I think I tonify more because I generally see more clients on a deficiency level. Mind you, there's some obvious times I'll do a straight drain, like, okay, you want to do a sedating formula for liver. That's easy for liver chi stagnation, right? Or anything like that. However, this is where I think it also comes down to a personality point, right? I'm willing to cut things out of people. That's the sedating formulas, but I generally like to build people up more. Right. Mm, and I think that is like now I'm the X factor. Like some people are very much like, just get your stuff together. I have no problem doing the cutting. However, I'm probably not the best. I mean, everyone's like, Zach's really good at cutting stuff. I'm like, I am and I'm not. Right. The options I have on the table are, again, limited by my personality. Because if I'm not willing to go there, I can't do the treatment.
The options on the table are limited by my personality. That's a powerful statement.
goes back to, again, the self-cultivation work. It's, I am limited by my own experiences. If I, for example, like people are like, Zach loves using fire points. I'm like, I absolutely do. They are my best friends. But if you know anything about me, I'm a fiery person. Right. Mm. And then people are like, well, you don't use it. Like, I have no problems doing Jing Well points. No problem whatsoever. And I can make them so it doesn't even hurt. But this is the difference of, well, am I like a Jing Well person? Probably not. So this is where, again, relationship comes into. What's your relationship with the points? What's your personality spectrum in terms of what you would do? Because if you're not willing to, like, let's just take an easy example for kidneys. Everyone knows kidneys for fear. Just that's the general thing. How many people are comfortable with fear, though? Or sheer terror? Not a lot of people. And we wonder why kidney formulas don't work as well. Because if you're not comfortable with fear, you can't cause wisdom to happen in your own personality spectrum.
It's interesting. I love these kind of conversations because I hadn't put wisdom and fear together. I mean, they're there.
It's right in front of you. Right.
It's right. Yeah. I mean, like since the first two weeks of acupuncture school, right? Wisdom and fear.
But wisdom comes about because you're fearful of what's going to come out. So you're trying to figure out strategies ahead of time. So this comes back to, again, we talk about kidneys not being an issue for most people. Yes, but if you're not good at, like, let's just take water at what it is. Water is death in Chinese culture. It's also life, but death and life at the same time. So if you're not good with death and you're not comfortable with the notion of death, you're probably not going to be good with kidneys at some level because you're still fearful. But you can't utilize the fear to do something else now because you haven't accepted it nor assimilated it in yourself. So to do that with somebody else and you're saying, I got to work on their kidneys and bone problems, you can't do that. You'll get some success because, again, there's some efficacy of the needles somewhat working, but not the wow effects.
But it helps if we have the cultivation that allows us more choices.
Absolutely. That's all we're doing is cultivation equals more choices. Have all the experiences in the world.
Cultivation for more choices.
That's kind of where I would take it. It's like, be a millionaire, be a billionaire, and still be a hobo. That's a very different life experience. But if you can do that, your acupuncture is probably going to be fantastic for certain things, right?
I love it. Yeah. Yeah, be able to be in both. And not enjoy them both without attachment. Well, that seems like a good place to put a pin in it for the day. Man, we've covered a lot of territory. Anything else that you'd like to share with folks in terms of cultivation before we wind it down?
So I would say, like, you know, first off, get my teacher's book, Hands on Chaos Magic by Andrea Vitamus. It's a good workbook. I still work through it every single day. And if you're the magic and those esoteric aspects do interest you, that's a great place to look into. I also will be publishing consistently around this Buddhist side of Chinese medicine. It's not much discussed, unfortunately, but I do break it down. So I'll be making like case studies and articles on things. So people can always look at that at wujixuan.ca, and that's going to be in our article section. So you'll have that. And then they can always just contact me directly if they have any questions. We do have webinars. We do have workshops. So it really is, if people want to learn we're available for hybrid or in person.
All right. I'll make sure that's on the show notes page. Zach Louis, this has been really kind of a wild ride this evening.
Yes, it has, Michael. Yes, it has.
Yes. I've got all these ideas stirring about the meridian, so might be time to do a little alchemical work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Chop wood, carry water. That's every day for us, right?
Chop wood, carry water. That's it, man. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I usually get squeamish around using the word magic. I get uncomfortable because it usually is associated with trickery, sleight of hand, and purposeful misdirection of attention. But if I understand what I think Zach is talking about when he's referring to magic, he's talking about a mindset, one that has one eye on the beliefs that we carry, and another on the kind of attentiveness that helps us to undo or reprogram how we see the world so that we might live into a more expansive one. It was Arthur C. Clarke who made the observation that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Bodhisattvas of channels and working money magic on ourselves to dispel limiting beliefs? Not so strange when you consider that we already can take words like wood or fire and dream up a whole set of physiologic and psychological experiences that our patients might have, or how the use of something like cognitive behavioral therapy, it can change how we approach and interact with money. Different stories, they present different opportunities. I think Arthur C. Clarke was right. Zach's perspective on how we are as practitioners, it reminds me of how much our presence in the clinic is needed, along with the capacity to skillfully apply the tools in the kit. Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight, share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Geological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community.